from WCAI in Woods Hole and WGBH Radio Boston, this is Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Each month, we check in with the reporters at Nature News for a roundup of recent science headlines. This time around, our producer Elsa Partan spoke with Nature's multimedia editor, Shamini Bundell.
Welcome back, Shamini.
Hi, thanks for having me, Elsa.
Researchers at McGill University are showing that male and female mice experience pain through different pathways. This could help change the way we manage pain in men and women.
Yeah, I found this a really quite surprising study from my experience. You sort of tend to think of pain as someone pokes you, maybe sticks a needle in you and you sort of go, ow, and it's all sort of nerve-based. But obviously, you know, you'd expect men and women to have the same kind of nerves. So when these researchers found different reactions between male and female mice, they kind of figured there was something else going on there.
And what is going on?
Well, the thing that they came up with as one of the main factors is the immune cells that are involved in pain. So this is actually more likely to be involved in things like chronic pain, which is obviously, you know, quite a big problem for a lot of people. And interestingly, chronic pain is quite a big problem for women in particular. It's mostly women who experience it. So when these researchers were looking at male and female mice, they found that different immune cells in the mice were part of the pain pathway. So, for example, they were looking at male mice with hypersensitivity and found that an immune cell called microglia were involved. Whereas when they looked at the female mice, microglia weren't involved, and it seemed to be T cells, which is another type of immune cell.
And are researchers thinking that this might actually be the same thing in people?
Well, this study was only done in mice, and it's sort of slightly more difficult in people to do. But one of the most important things is that they are actually looking for these differences. So a lot of the time, if you're doing experiments with mice, you might think, oh, I'll just use male mice. It's probably the same. It's going to be easier just to sort of have male mice, and they used to think, well, they don't have as many hormonal fluctuations, so that'll be much simpler. Whereas now that they've realized there's a difference, more and more people are making sure that they actually look for the differences. And it's the same with people. If you're doing a study with a whole bunch of people and you testing a pain medication maybe or a pain treatment, and you know maybe it does okay, but it's not doesn't look like it's particularly good, you might find, oh, it's working actually really well in men but not in women. So looking for those differences is really important.
I'm talking with Shamini Bundell from Nature News. Here's another story that's gotten a lot of attention this week. Paleontologists have been working on a mystery. Almost everyone agrees that dinosaurs went extinct when a huge asteroid hit the Earth, but they can't find any dinosaur bones in that geological layer leading right up to there. Now, one scientist working in North Dakota says he's found a big deposit of fossils that shows the exact moment the asteroid hit. What did he find?
Well, this is a really cool find in North Dakota, and it's basically a sort of fossilized jumble of a whole load of fish, so freshwater fish, marine life, vegetation, all kind of stuck together, and it includes in there little pieces of glass that we think came from this asteroid hitting the Earth. It was sort of like molten rock, essentially. And all this suggests, so the glass, the mixture of stuff, that these animals died and were dumped here at the time that asteroid hit the Earth.
Wow, which is really it would be the first time that this has been seen.
Yeah, it's incredible that you've captured that sort of snapshot in moment of such a significant sort of historical event.
Are there any dinosaurs in there?
Well, so the current paper that has just come out, that the reporting is on, is about this, about the fish and then the water life. The dinosaurs is the big question, though, because one of the sort of mysteries of this big extinction is that just before the extinction, if you look in the rocks, there aren't dinosaur bones around. And some people have said, well, you know, maybe it wasn't really the extinction that killed them. Maybe they were kind of already going extinct due to various other things, and that's why we haven't seen them. Now, the paleontologist who has announced this find, Robert De Palma, has said that there are dinosaur bones in this geological layer, suggesting that the dinosaurs were thriving right up until that moment. Now, that's not been published in this paper, so it's not been peer-reviewed. No one's seen these results yet. But that's a very possibly exciting announcement still to come.
We'll be watching for that. I'm talking with Nature News editor Shamini Bundell. Here's another story we're following. Researchers report that children have lower social mobility later in life when they grow up in a neighborhood with high levels of lead and violence and neighborhoods in which a lot of adults go to jail. It's not the first study of its kind, but what's different about this one?
Yeah, so, you know, everyone is interested in, you know, trying to find out why there might be social mobility in some cases and not in others. You know, how do we encourage social mobility? How do we stop poverty just sort of keeping going? And this study looks, as you've mentioned, some kind of unusual factors, because people have studied this before and people look at if your parents are poor, you're going to have less advantages growing up. That might cause a decrease in social ability. If your community is poor, that might have a factor as well. Whereas, you know, the particular things that these guys have pulled out, so like lead, they looked at lead levels in children's blood and found that that was a good predictor for future social mobility. They looked at the neighbourhoods that the children were growing up in, the levels of adult incarceration in those neighbourhoods, the level of violence in those neighbourhoods, and they found that where these kids were living was just as good a predictor as maybe the personal family effects or maybe just poverty effects. So it's something that people hadn't looked at so much before.
Well, do they have any conclusions about what should be done?
Well, I mean, that's the key question, isn't it? And some of the things that they were looking for were whether particular factors could help. So they were looking at whether there's a sort of a sense of community cohesion and trust in the neighbours and organised community activities and whether those kind of things helped with this social mobility. And they did find some correlations. But the fact that they've found that this sort of neighbourhood effect of where people are growing up and what other adults in that community are doing are such a big impact kind of implies that maybe that's where the focus should be for improvements going forward.
That's multimedia editor for Nature News, Shamini Bundell. Thanks, Shamini.
Thanks.